You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's installment of To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as he is every single week, is
Tristan Riddell.
And we have got a humdinger of a topic in store for you. I don't know about you, Tristan, but I've got my compression phaser rifles ready with a modulating frequency. The shields are up. I think I'm ready to engage the Borg.
I was going to say, I was like, if there was ever a word to describe the Borg, it would be humdinger.
Yes. Whenever you need a big story, especially on Voyager, you go to the Borg.
Yeah, when we first started the idea of doing an alien analysis, you know, where we're talking about the bad guys in Star Trek Voyager, not just the villains, not just the individual antagonists, but like a race of beings who are an overall antagonist, everybody listening, including us, we knew that it was all leading up to one species, and that species is the Borg. And we, Char, you and I were talking on the other side of the room that when you go on Memory Alpha and you talk about the appearances of the Borg in Star Trek, you have 6 appearances in TNG, 1 in Deep Space Nine, and 1 in Enterprise. And then when you check the number next to Voyager, it says 22. And that's just, when you compare it to TNG in second place, that's a big gap in second place. But then also, yeah, with like the 22 is just like references and hallucinations and flashbacks. And so when you boil down to it, it's about maybe a little less than 15 episodes where the Borg are actually featured as a plot line. But still, that's a lot of episodes.
It totally is. And that's not even counting the 7 of 9 stuff. That's separate. We're just talking straight up, this story is about the Borg. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yes. So we have a lot to cover. I don't think by any means we're going to get through this, but let's tackle as much as we possibly can. Now, we knew about the Borg way before Voyager because of TNG, but we knew that with Voyager being in the Delta Quadrant, the day was going to come that we were going to see some Borg. And of course, I loved their introduction where they showed us a Borg corpse in Blood Fever as a warning, they're coming. And then lo and behold, by the end of season 3, we were into Scorpion, and that's kind of when they when all hell broke loose with the Borg, basically.
This was a fantastic introduction to the Borg, and we've said it many times before. The Blood Fever introduction was creepy, it was weird, and when we found out that there was going to be a show in the Delta Quadrant, you know, at Star Trek and Delta Quadrant, we were like, oh crap, this is where the Borg is going to be. And, you know, several people, lots of people have tons of opinions about how the Borg were used too much and they kind of took away the value of the Borg. But regardless of that opinion, you have to agree that there is some good stuff in here.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think we definitely need to talk about whether the Borg were used too much in Voyager. But some of my favorite episodes, and especially of the two-parters, because whenever they needed a big two-parter, they went to the Borg and did a big, huge thing. Some of my favorites are Borg episodes. They are completely Borg-centric, and, I mean, how can it not, in a way? The Borg, they've been the supreme baddies of the Milky Way since season 2? Or was it season 1? Season 2 of TNG. That's a long time.
We should talk about the Borg a little bit in TNG and how, like, what we thought of them and how they are different from Voyager Borg, because the Borg we see in Voyager are heavily influenced by the First Contact Borg You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And some people might really get on my case for saying this, but I do think, at least to some degree, I don't know how small or how big, opinions vary, but I think the Borg were bigger baddies and more threatening and more scary in TNG than they ever were on Voyager.
I would agree with that, because in TNG, they were new, they were threatening, they were mysterious, and, you know, we always fear what we don't understand and what we don't know. And by the time we got to Voyager, I mean, we had six hardcore episodes about the Borg and TNG. Like, TNG did not waste Borg episodes. There was no such thing as a throwaway. We had Q-Who, we had Best of Both Worlds 1 and 2, we had I-Borg, which is all about Borg psychology and individuality, and then we have Descent 1 and 2, which is even more so about Borg going haywire. And so these are all heavy-hitting episodes. And so by the time we get to Voyager, we're like, oh, it's the Borg. Yeah, you know, they're scary. But didn't we just get done with a movie about them? You know?
And that's just it. They were intentionally going for the Borg on Voyager when they did because of First Contact. The movie was released at the very toward the tail end of 96. And lo and behold, the end of season 3 of Voyager is 97. Not a coincidence.
Not a coincidence at all. And I'd have to agree with you that they're definitely scarier in TNG, but a lot of people complain about how they look different in First Contact and Voyager, how like they're greasy, they're sweaty, and they got those vein things going on, and the technology's different. When I was a kid, all I thought is, I was like, oh, they just, you know, they're constantly trying to evolve and advance themselves, so they must have done something over the course of the years.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's just like the Klingon makeup. It evolved over time as the budget got bigger and the technology got better. Happened with the Borg. We don't need the duct tape version anymore.
Yeah, see, that's the real world. Real world answer is,
that,
you know, like, hey, we have more money and it's easier to do it this way, so we're just going to do it this way.
Yeah, lest we forget, this was still produced in the 20th century where things are, like money, are very real, unfortunately, and they could only do so much. Budgets can be very, very tough.
One thing that I really wanted to happen, I wanted to happen so bad, was in Enterprise with Regeneration when I heard that there was going to be a Borg episode.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way that they did it was First Contact Borgs that were trapped in that time period and frozen in the ice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have the more advanced, the greasy, the veins, you know, that's why we have First Contact Borg. I wish so bad that somehow they did a storyline where they got a hold of Borg from the 22nd century instead of the 24th century, so that it will look more like how they looked in TNG, or even less evolved than that. I wanted them to use that. Yeah, I wanted them to use those kind of makeup techniques that they did in the 80s.
Makes you wonder, okay, what would 22nd century Borg look like? Like, would they be powered by Intel chips? What's going on here?
AMD.
I know
people are going to write in saying, no, you know, the first, like, that would take away from them first meeting, you know, the Borg and Q-Who, and, you know, why couldn't the Federation understand the cybernetic beings that they were chasing?
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, from the 2nd century on to the 24th century, didn't they take pictures, you know, things like that. Yes, I understand that happened, but that's just my opinion about the makeup. I wanted to see the makeup again.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Totally valid point. I don't think you're alone there either. I know of at least a small group of fans who cherish the old style Borg. They think that is the best thing ever. I don't entirely care too much the more refined look. I mean, it's a little more green lighting, and it's a little silkier because of the sweat or the water, whatever is making them look all, you know, greasy.
Mm-hmm.
But there was absolutely nothing wrong with old-style Borg either. And so, okay, I'm completely indifferent about this, I guess.
One thing that I did like about the old-style Borg, and we'll move on after this, is I felt like there was, this may be a little contradictory, but I felt like there was more individuality in the look of the Borg in TNG than there was in First Contact. Because
no,
I feel
you're
like,
right.
Yeah, I feel like in First Contact, it was just like, oh, every other drone looks like every other drone. But then in TNG, you had different, like, head compartments, you had different eye pieces. And, like, I know there are variations in First Contact, but I felt like there were even more so in TNG, which could lead us into which is better for a race that has no individuality, you know.
In all honesty, I think the drone is a drone is a drone thing works the best.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, collectivistically, if they all look the same, they are the same, are they not? So
yeah,
it
yeah.
only fits.
I think so. So with that in mind, one thing, you know, like I, Borg in TNG was all about Borg individuality. And mm-hmm. they sent Hugh back into the collective to see if he could raise hell with being an individual.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And he did, and it created a small faction of Borg in Descent, and so we got to see the aftermath of that, a season after that.
Mm-hmm.
And in Voyager, we deal a lot with individuality, mainly because of Seven.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is iBorg on steroids for 4 seasons.
4 years, yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you... Okay, so what do you think about that, Char? What do you think that they kind of hit us over the head a little too much or not enough when it came to individuality of the Borg species?
Okay, I think as far as Seven of Nine goes and her exploration of humanity, deciding whether or not she even wanted to be a part of the whole thing and all that, Janeway fighting her constantly, I really do think that they overdid that. It's like once they brought Seven onto the show, so many stories focus on Seven of Nine, and a substantial amount of them have to deal with her individuality and growth as a human being. Which, okay, yeah, I totally get it. It's intriguing, and there's a lot of potential for growth there. But I guess what kind of ticks me off about the whole thing is that, you know, they did that in lieu of developing the characters we already had for 3 seasons prior. Like, B'Elanna, Tom, Harry, they all get thrown to the wayside to focus more on Seven. I know you need to give attention to a new character so we know who she is and why we should care about her, but boy, did they just go overboard with that, in my opinion. It's like once they turn the corner, okay, we're going to do this Borg thing and we're going to put an ex-Borg character on the ship. Boy, they took it and they ran with it.
Yeah, I feel like I think you're absolutely right. I feel like the reason why we are overwhelmed with this individuality is because of what they did with Seven of Nine. And if it wasn't for Seven of Nine constantly talking about it, not just going through it because we know the character is going through it, but just imagine if we constantly had Tom talk about how he doesn't fit in with the Voyager crew. Think about if every single conversation we had with Tom, he's like, you know, I don't belong here, Harry. I don't belong here with everybody else.
Oh my God,
I'm a criminal, you know?
Can you imagine him saying this in season 7?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. If
right?
he said that in season 7, we'd be rolling our eyes.
Yeah, so after, like, it gets to a point where season 5, season 6, and we're still having this conversation between Janeway and Seven, I feel like, okay, we've been here before. Think of something else.
Yeah, see, if we dealt with that a little bit in season 4 and maybe a little bit in season 5, or like heavy in season 4 and then a little bit in season 5, I feel like we'd be fine. And if we'd mm-hmm. stuck to episodes like Survival Instinct, where the plot was actually around individuality and this and how scared Seven of Nine was, even in the past when she was a drone of her own individuality,
mm-hmm.
then how it bites them in the butt later on. See, that's a cool story. That's a good story. That's not just Janeway and Seven complaining. You know, about how she's not allowed to do what she wants. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not just bickering with each other for the sake of bickering and adding drama to the story. Yeah, there's definitely exceptions to this. Another one I would bring up is Dark Frontier. The big, huge two-parter that's aired as one episode, which was kind of a novel concept at the time, at least for episodic television. And that's the one where the Borg Queen tries to get Seven back into the collective, which I think was an inevitable thing. I mean, mm-hmm. the story kind of writes itself in a way, like, there's that potential from the get-go. So, okay, let's have this story. And I felt like, you know what, all in all, I have some problems with the story, but as far as entertainment value goes and the core ideas, it was a great hour and a half of television.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's so weird because I always forget about Dark Frontier when,
well,
like,
yeah.
going... when going back and thinking about the Borg or thinking about Voyager, and I don't know why. But then, like, even when you brought it up, I was like, which one was that again?
Well, you know why? I think I know why.
Why is that?
It's because it's in this mix where there are tons of Borg two-parters, seasons 5 through 7, let's say. You've got Unimatrix Zero, Dark Frontier. You, of course, have Endgame at the very end. And those are just the two-parters.
Yeah, I always feel like Dark Frontier is kind of like Raven Part 2.
It is.
And I once I'm thinking about it, like, this is a good episode. We get to see a little bit of history. We get to see your parents and their story and them chasing mm-hmm. the Borg. I think it's a very good concept, very good sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah.
My only thing is, which a lot of people have complained about over the years, is the time frame that is used for this is absolutely ridiculous.
Like, yes. Like I said, I have problems with this story too, but please continue.
Oh no, I mean I wasn't gonna delve into it too hard because I don't have the years memorized, but I mean from when Q-Who started to when Annika should have been assimilated and how she would have been assimilated and how old, you know, Seven of Nine is now, it just doesn't match up. It doesn't match up whatsoever. Unless they put her in a maturation chamber and like accelerated her growth and Seven of Nine's actually only 12,
you know. Oh gosh, that's an awful thought in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, the timeline just doesn't quite match up. But if you throw that away, like you often have to do in sci-fi stories and in Star Trek all the time, if you just kind of say, okay, no, that's cool, it's a good story, we don't need the dates to match up.
Yeah, it's one of those things you just have to look past it so you can actually appreciate what is good in that episode. And I thought it was fantastic that, yes, it was Raven Part 2. I totally agree with you on that. And that's the kind of stuff about Seven that I wanted to know, especially maybe at that point in the series, just because I was so exhausted with the mm-hmm. sparring with Janeway. I wanted to know more about her parents. I wanted to know more about her assimilation. I wanted to know just why were her parents out there in the first place? I mean, to me, they kind of seem like irresponsible parents, but that's something you could certainly debate. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I wanted to learn about Seven's character, and we just got little teeny things thrown at us, but I really appreciate Dark Frontier for what it did do, what it did contribute in that fashion.
Okay, I just now remembered another thing that I don't like about Dark Frontier.
Go for it.
That would have been the time, that would have been the situation to use 1989 style makeup techniques.
You're right!
Yeah, I'm ashamed that I forgot that in that moment, because I remember seeing that episode going, hey, this is not the time. Now, I'm not talking about like, you know, like, okay, in Enterprise, you know, when they showed the Klingons, we're like, no, we're going to show the movie Klingons, we're going to show the TNG Klingons, when they, like, a lot of fans were like, no, they didn't look like that in TOS, and so they had to do the whole retcon thing. So, okay, I guess because of that, you could argue, like, just do the thing that they did with the Klingons and then just say, no, it's a production thing. It's not a real world thing.
Only they did explain it on Enterprise.
Although they did explain it on Enterprise. Some people like it. Some people don't.
Yeah.
But I felt like it would have been so easy to do. You know, maybe I'm wrong because they just got done with First Contact. They got done with First Contact. And so because of that, they had some sets. And, you know, it's the sets that they use all the time and the makeup and the costumes. And they would have had to create the TNG ones from scratch. So I guess it wouldn't have been easy to do. But
yeah,
I just
felt like
it would have been so nice to do a throwback in that episode.
Oh, that would have been a fantastic detail, because then you would have seen both versions in the same episode.
Absolutely.
And that would have just kicked ass.
That would have been fantastic. I think that was a missed opportunity.
Oh, abso-fraggin-lutely. If any of the producers are actually listening to our show, I bet they're just kicking themselves right now thinking, God dang it, that was a good idea.
Like, why didn't we do that? I'm sure that several people on the writing staff were like, hey, we should do this. And the producer's like, go screw yourself. That's going to cost us double our budget.
Maybe so. One thing we should mention about Dark Frontier is that it's not exactly the same Borg Queen as we knew in First Contact. And not just the actress change either. I mean, she kind of created her own identity as a new Borg Queen. We had Alice Krieg as Borg Queen destroyed in First Contact, and of course, they created a new one. And this Borg Queen in Dark Frontier, played by Susanna Thompson, is a little bit different. And I just want to know, in your opinion, do you have a preference for which one? Like, do you like one more than the other?
Oh, I mean, Alice Krieg is Alice Krieg. I mean, you...
It is hard to top that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just... I feel like we've talked about this before, where Susanna Thompson is a fine actress. She's been in the business for a long time. She's mm-hmm. very good at what she does, and she's all over the place. She is all over television.
Yes.
She's done movies as well. She is fantastic, and she did a fantastic job. She definitely carried the torch for Alice very well.
I agree.
And I applaud her for her performance, but it's hard to... When you're not the original, you're always going to be compared to the original.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just asked the question, so obviously, yeah. Yes.
With all that said, I don't know if I like seeing Alice Krieg in Endgame.
Oh, really? Okay, because that was actually the next question I had. Do you think they should have stuck with Susanna Thompson at that point, or was it cool to have Alice Krieg back?
It was definitely a smart promotional choice.
Okay.
I think it was definitely smart to advertise, like, hey, Alice Krieg is back as the Borg Queen. Everybody really needs to pay attention. But I feel like people who might not have liked Voyager might tune in for that because it's a TNG connection. And
yeah.
Even though you could argue that the Queen herself is a TNG connection, Alice Krieg is even more so.
Yeah, because she was that Queen.
Right, exactly. But at the same time, I'm like, but that's not Voyager's Queen. Susanna Thompson is.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. I was really torn about it. Initially, I thought, okay, they changed the actress because for whatever reason, Alice Krieg is not available. That's fine. But then, like with Endgame, I thought initially, maybe they just should have stuck with it because it's a different Borg Queen. It should be the other actress. But then at the same time, my nostalgia card is saying, hey, it's Alice Krieg again. She's in the Borg makeup. I love it. So it's so tough. I love them both.
I feel like it could be argued that they didn't use a different actress because it's a different queen. I personally don't think that's the reason.
Well, no, actually, it was just because Alice Krieg wasn't available. But then when Susanna Thompson came aboard, she decided, okay, I am a different Borg Queen. I'm going to be alike in certain ways, but I'm going to be oh so slightly different. I'm going to be an individual as the Borg Queen. How contradictory of a statement.
Okay, so I thought you were trying to say that because Alice Krieg died in First Contact, that they had a different version of the Queen.
Well, yes and no. That wasn't really the intent, but that's sort of how it happened during production, just because of Alice Krieg's unavailability.
Okay, because I never really pictured it that way, because we find out in First Contact that Alice Krieg was actually on the cube that was in Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah.
And, you know, we also see Alice Krieg in First Contact, and so we see Alice Krieg in Endgame, and so I feel like it could be confirmed that, oh, this is the same character, it's the same whatever, just Susanna Thompson is doing what a good actress does, and like you said, makes it her own.
Yeah, and she's kind of the substitute teacher, I guess, because Alice Krieg couldn't come in for some reason. I don't know. You know, one thing that I don't envy at all about either actress is the makeup they had to undergo to be the Borg Queen. I was reading on Memory Alpha about this. It's a good 6-hour makeup job every single day.
Jeez.
And especially for Dark Frontier, production was really kind of fast-paced because they were shooting in the holiday season, which we just got over. You know how hectic it is. Can you imagine doing this on a TV schedule? Oh my God, no. And she was working something like 21-hour days to get through this so they could get out on time. And could you imagine 6 hours of makeup and barely getting any sleep, having to do it all over again for probably like, what, a good week, 7 days? Wow, what a trooper. What a trooper.
Yeah, it's, I can't imagine going through what, like, Ethan Phillips and Michael Dorn and all those people do. Like, to do your job. I can't imagine mm-hmm. having to go through that.
Yeah.
I would never want to be an alien. Like, if I was a full-time actor on Star Trek, I would never want to be an alien. But if I was, like, a guest star or something, yeah, let's do it. You know, it'd be great.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the human makeup is way easier.
Yeah.
For sure, yes. I mean, it's kind of cool to watch the process of it happen, but I totally agree. Day in and day out, year after year, for 7 years, wouldn't you get a little bored with it?
Yeah.
I would.
We posed the question at the beginning, you know, did Voyager use the Borg well? Did mm-hmm. they overuse them? Did they use them enough? Are they not scary anymore? You know, in Endgame, did it really matter that they use the Borg? You know, are we frightened by the Borg? Do we know that the Federation is going to prevail no matter what? You know, I want to know what you think overall. Like, out of all the 22 episodes that the Borg are featured, you know, is 22 or 15 too many?
I would definitely say yes. You mentioned a very key word earlier, and that is mysterious. And that is a part of what made the Borg so scary in Best of Both Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we get to Voyager, we do know more about them. But Voyager makes this even worse because every time you do a Borg story, you have to know a little bit more about them. And every time you go to the well, a lot of people say, well, they just kind of neutered the Borg in a way, just because you took away all the mystique, all the scariness, and then they're just another alien race. Granted, an advanced alien race, but they win every time. This one lone ship in the Delta Quadrant, yeah, and they find a way to escape or win or just whatever to get the story done every single time, and that's just not realistic. It's really not.
Yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, we did need to see the Borg for sure, but especially when it came to explosive two-parters for rating sweeps or whatever the reason was, yeah, it went way too far. What do you think?
I'm torn because I've enjoyed the Borg a lot, and I enjoy the collection of episodes. I do a rewatch of just Borg episodes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just do some of the key episodes. Like, you know, I do, you know, Best of Both Worlds, Iborg, Descent, and Dark Frontier, Unimatrix Zero, Endgame. You know, like, I mainly just touch on those. So I feel like when the Borg were used in those two-parters that you were talking about, I feel like it's gangbusters. It's amazing. I feel like it's great television. But when we constantly see them on the side, when we constantly see them in just little one-offs, I feel like even in Hope and Fear, they were the reason why Arturus did what he did. Like with the Raven and Collective and Imperfection, we see them so much that it desensitizes us to them.
Absolutely.
And we knew going into the Delta Quadrant, okay, we're going to see the Borg more than anybody else, because we're in the heart of their territory. I feel like if they just kept it mainly to those two-parters and then maybe one or two one-offs, like with the drone episode,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it was the 26th century or 29th century drone.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like
the offshoot, like I know not yeah. everybody liked it, but Unity.
Yeah, yeah, like stuff like that. If we just did one or two of those and then threw in the two-parters, I feel like we would never have this conversation among fans saying, oh, they used them too much.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're totally right. If they would have just reserved the Borg for the big gangbusters episodes, as you said, then it wouldn't have been so bad. But not only did we have all those other little one-hours along with all the big two-parters, but we also had the Borg constantly in our face as a result of Seven.
Yes.
And I think that just expounds it even further. And
yeah.
had we not had that, maybe the Borg could have been portrayed differently. But, yeah, season 4 through 7, sometimes I will watch seasons 1 through 3 just to get away from the Borg. I hate to admit it. I mean, I don't hate the Borg, but you just kind of get tired of it after you watch so many in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, see, that's the thing is that if this was Battlestar Galactica, then you can't say, oh, enough with the Cylons, okay? Like, we get it. The Cylons are bad.
Right, or the Jem'Hadar on DS9.
Right, that's the purpose of the show. You know, like, that is what's going on. That is their antagonist. With Voyager, we're like, no, we get several antagonists and we go through them. But I feel like you nailed it on the head there. It is a trade-off for having a Borg crew member. It's either we have Seven of Nine, who is a great character, and I'm glad she's on the show, and then tons of Borg episodes, or we have just key Borg episodes and no Seven of Nine.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I think that is a great question for our listeners to either chime in on the forums, to go to trek.fm/forums, or to write us in, go to trek.fm/contact, and let us know what you think. Let's see if we can get a consensus going here. I don't know which side's going to win.
I don't know either, but I'm really looking forward to hearing about it.
Me too. And on that note, I think it's a good time to start wrapping up. So, before we go, we need to mention an iTunes review, because we got one. Yay! We need to thank Dante Hopkins, who has also written in to the show a couple of times, and we thank him for that. He gave us a 5-star review on iTunes, so thank you very much for that. That helps other people find our podcast, and the more the merrier. So thank you very much. And thanks also to those who took us up on our offer to send in topic ideas, because we did get some, and we've got some fresh things to put into the pool of topic ideas. And if we use the topic that you submitted, we'll give you a shout out on the show, just like we do with iTunes reviews. And hey, we love doing that. We love it. We love it. We can't say that enough. But Borg are not the only thing that we are talking about on Trek FM this week. So let's have a little preview of other things that have happened on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Romulans on TOS.
To be fair, maybe their visual communications were on a different codec. Maybe the original Earth ships were using Skype and the Romulans were using Google+.
Earl Grey.
Generations with Standard Orbit.
And again, I don't know if Mike and Drew would say that Kirk is at his best or not.
No, he's not. But Chekhov is on point.
The Ready Room.
Affliction and Divergence.
Yeah, the other interesting thing about that, though, is to compare the Klingon ethics with the Section 31 ethics, right? Because there are, like you said, there are some groups within the Klingons who maybe don't feel exactly the same way. But then there's this group within the humans who feels completely different. And you kind of wonder what the Klingons think maybe about someone who wouldn't do this.
The Orb.
Implications of genetic enhancement.
There's just a danger that you're going to become like the lower rung of society, and only the people whose parents have the money to enhance them are going to be those who have good lives.
To the journey!
Voyager Season 2 Marathon.
So he starts searching frantically for clues as to what happens when this small rock gets thrown at him. So he kind of ducks, pulls out his phaser, gets ready, and another stone comes flying through, and guess who's throwing it?
It's got to be the monkey.
Of course it is. Thank you.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The 4400.
You're describing a scenario in which we watch something and laugh hysterically that people all around us, everyone we know, will watch us react to this in this way, and they would say, what is wrong with you two?
Warp 5.
Xenophobia and the Coalition of Planets.
Justification in his mind is that the Vulcans were observing us. They knew the war was happening. They didn't do anything to stop it. But, you know, it really wasn't the place of the Vulcans to step in and stop World War III.
Literary Treks.
James Swallow, the Poison Chalice.
Everybody in this story is dragged into a situation they don't want to be in. And that's kind of where the title, The Poison Chalice, originally came from, is the idea that, you know, Riker is given this promotion, which on paper sounds like a really great idea, but it's a poison chalice. You know, it turns out that it's not what he thought it was. And in fact, you know, he's being dragged into something that he doesn't want to be involved in.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of the shows that we have on Trek FM. We've got everything for every kind of fan, every day of the week. We're going crazy. We are on basically any platform that you can think of. Or if you just want to go to our website, go to trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory, and you can access everything from there. Now, Tristan, we have a sponsor, audible.com. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
So, as fun as taking on the Borg has been in this episode, you know what I'm really looking forward to?
What's that?
It's next week, because we're going to discuss Voyager on Blu-ray. Now, we don't know that this is going to happen just yet, right now, but it's pretty likely that it's going to happen, and we're going to talk about the episodes that we can't wait to see in HD if and when it happens.
If there's a just and loving God, it will happen.
You said it, yeah. And everybody knows that I'm a junkie for extras, so we ought to talk about any extras we want Paramount and CBS to throw in to these Blu-rays so that we will, even though we have the DVDs already, we're going to go out and we're going to buy all the Blu-rays.
See, I'm looking forward to this conversation because I know that you are such a special features junkie, and I think they're a cool addition, but I'll like maybe watch 5 minutes of them and say, hey, that was nice. But I am so heavily focused on the HD experience. Give me as many pixels as you can. So I think this is going to be a fun conversation about me talking about being an HD junkie and you talking about loving special features. So I'm looking forward to next week.
Okay, that's going to be fantastic. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!